Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that promotes recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, visit www.icha.ca. I'm your host, Cam Wells. The first segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Ed Epp from the Christian Blind Mission. So tell me a little bit about the latest happenings with CBM.
Sure. CBM works internationally with people with disabilities, primarily to give them the same opportunities that people around them. The latest happenings with CBM is that we're really decided to focus more and more on children. And making a difference in the life of a child and their family, primarily because we don't have unlimited resources, and we believe that this has the potential to impact the next generation and actually stop the cycle of poverty and disability.
So, how do you go about spreading the word about the work you do?
Yeah, that's a challenge. It's a big challenge. We do it in a number of ways. The most effective way we found, we believe anyways, in a lot of the countries we work in Ethiopia or in Malawi or Tanzania, is actually to empower people with disabilities to talk about their own situation and their own successes and challenges. And if we can do that, they're much more effective at talking to their own communities and governments than someone from the outside. We have support groups for mothers with children with cerebral palsy, for example, who come together and not only support each other, but then they start speaking to other neighbors about the issues around accessibility. We have women with fistula that come together and spread the news, and as a result, they talk to their local governments, their local mayors, chiefs, that kind of thing, and it does impact government policy. So I think in the countries we work, it's more effective to have people with disabilities and our partners speak for themselves. In Canada, we work with the Canadian government. We're trying very hard to show the Canadian government that their current policy of accessibility for the most vulnerable in a feminist agenda is a very good policy, but it has to include people with disabilities. Otherwise, they won't achieve their own agenda.
So, in your time with CBM, has there been any success story that stands out for you?
Sure. Let me tell you a story that's, I'm not sure it's a success or not, but I think it's an important one for our learnings. When I started with CBM 9 years ago, I went to Malawi, almost 10 years ago now. And while there, I went out with one of our community workers. And we were in a village, and someone came to the community worker and said there was a baby in the next village that was dying. And we walked over, and there was a little baby in the arms of his grandmother, and he had a severe cleft lip and palate, and he was basically starving to death because he couldn't drink milk. It kept coming back through the nose. And the grandmother was waiting for him to die. And Julius, the community worker, wrote down his name. Yeah, I remember him asking distinctly, what is his name? What is the child's name? And they said his name was Siddiqui. And at that moment, in my mind, it became this amazing moment, because at that moment, Siddiqui went from a child waiting to die to a child with a nutrition plan, a potential operation, and life. And I followed Siddiqui throughout the last 9 years, and I just came back from Malawi. And I went back to that village, and I went to his school, and I saw him. And he is living. So it's, in a way, it's a huge success story, and it's indicative of the kind of work we do. On the other hand, I went back to his home. His grandmother has died. His father has died. He is a very sickly child. The malnutrition, he's as a young child, has meant that he has a fragile immune system. He gets every disease, malaria, Bilharzia. His mother has four other children. She can't afford to feed the kids, and actually the kids are in danger of dropping out of school because they can't pay school fees, and the school fees for the children, for all four children, were less than $10 for the year. And it got me thinking again about what do we mean by impact. Certainly, impact in Siddiqui's life was, first of all, living, and that's important. But long-term impact is having a secure home, having a livelihood that you can, a certainty that you're going to eat, that you're going to have clean water. And so, you know, we want to surround all of our programs not only with the emergency medical care that's needed, not only the rehab, but also how do people get livelihood training? How do we put them into programs for village banking and savings and loans programs so that they can invest in something. And we're talking very small amounts. And so actually we have started a program in Malawi that just this last year of both shelter 2 years ago, partnering with Habitat for Humanity, and livelihood this year. And Siddiqui's mother is going to be in that. So I'm hoping when I go back, it's kind of like a case study for me to follow.
So if you could send any message to the community about why CBM's work matters, what would you say?
Yeah, it's an easy one. It matters because we're dealing with people. It matters because I want my daughters to have opportunity, and why shouldn't everybody have the same opportunity? And the fact is that in a lot of countries, having a disability is a death sentence. Children die much more because they have a disability. They don't go to school because they have a disability. They don't have hope for the future because of disability. And why that matters is because they're human beings. They're the same as my daughters in the eyes of God, and they should be the same in our eyes as well.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
Next up, we're going to hear a segment that I taped ahead about holiday successes among students with disabilities.
This is Cam Wells here with
Carly Rock.
We're going to be talking a little bit about holiday traditions among people with disabilities here at St. Clair. So, in your time in CIC, you were associated with a group of people who had various intellectual disabilities. The holidays had to bring out some tradition for them, something they loved to do.
Well, for the CICE program, every year we have this, like, holiday party with the rest of the adult upgrading program. So we have, like, pizza, we have pasta. With them, we have a free lunch, and we have, like, a game going on if we bring them, like, Cards Against Humanity, We just like have like a 3-day to ourselves. So it's not really that big of a tradition, but it happens like every year.
So did you find that your fellow students reacted well to it? Did they enjoy it?
Well, yeah, it was very, it was kind of a big deal for them. Because we have like a little break from like the average routine we have. Instead of like doing like books and like exams or like essays from our regular classes, we have to like have like a day off. We have a day off from holiday. Before holiday break, we get to hang out with our friend and so really get to like have fun.
So, particularly on students with learning disabilities, it's a chance to get away from the stress and the strain that comes with higher learning.
Well, for any student, it's a big stress reliever, especially before the holidays. It's stressful enough. But obviously, people with disabilities are no different from anybody else of no disability. It's not all. So, traditions are really that different from anybody else.
So, what was the best part for you in your time?
From my time in CICE in general, is definitely making friends who kind of relate to me, disability-wise, and get to hear their stories. And on, like, an intellectual level, I get to, like, go to college. I didn't be like any other student.
So, in terms of the holidays, what was the most enjoyable for you?
In terms of the holidays, I definitely get to see, like, everyone, like, gang along and not kill each other, like, because, well, it's stressful enough with, like, exams and the holidays, like, people will get testy, right? But for, like, a day, we are like, hey, it's Christmas, let's have some free food, let's play some Cards Against Humanity, let's play, like, Go Fish or something.
So, what are your hopes for the traditions going forward? Do you hope that adult upgrading will keep doing things like this?
I hope adult upgrading does do things like this and include people with learning disabilities or people with non-learning disabilities. I hope everyone gets included together because, in the end of the day, we're all the students in one big college. We're all basically one big family.
Thank you for taking the time out to do this.
Oh, it's no problem at all. Happy to be here once again.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
UWindsor Campus Police remind you to always be aware of building safety and security to help prevent theft and break-ins. Always keep track of your belongings and never leave them unattended, even for a minute. You should report suspicious behavior immediately to campus police at 519-253-3000, extension 1234. Examples include a stranger going from office to office, a person loitering for a long period of time, or somebody waiting outside of offices near closing time. Always stay aware of building safety and security on campus. UWindsor Campus Police is here to help you.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that promotes recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Ed Epp from CBM and St. Clair College student Carly Rock. In this next segment of our show, we'll hear from Nicole Agaronic, who will be telling us a little bit about the American Dance Wheels Foundation. So tell me a little bit about your experiences with the American Dance Wheels Foundation.
So the American Dance Wheels Foundation is a really awesome organization that provides the opportunity to learn wheelchair ballroom dancing to people of all ability, and it expands a popular mainstream sport and makes that opportunity available for a lot of different people. And over the years, American Dance Wheels has really evolved in its initiatives. So in addition to teaching and performance engagements, it also has been involved in disability advocacy. So it's a really great organization to be a part of because it has so many aspects to it.
So, how did you become involved with the association?
So I have experience as I used to compete in ballroom dancing, and then I discovered the American Danceville Foundation and also learned about their teacher certification courses. And I just thought it was really cool, really great opportunity. And I went through the teacher certification courses and then also performed with them and have had the opportunity to start classes and participate in those initiatives. So it's been a really great experience over the last few years.
So are there any challenges in teaching someone in a wheelchair ballroom dancing?
The challenges are no different than teaching two standing partners. I mean, it's just a different kind of technique that you will learn when you're dancing, when it's a standing and a seated dancer moving together, than the technique you would use for two standing dancers. But it's the same thing. It still involves a process where two dancers have to learn how to connect their body movements, body weight, and learn how to move together. So it really, the challenges are no different.
So, in your time with the foundation, has there been any success moment that stands out for you?
There have been several really memorable moments with ADF. So in 2015, in the summer of 2015, we had an opportunity to perform at the closing ceremony of the Pan American Games. So that was a really great experience because we were able to showcase this art form on a larger platform. And this past summer, we performed at Lincoln Center in New York. And those performance opportunities were really, it's really amazing to have the positive feedback when we share our art form in this way. But I think the most rewarding experiences are to see the success of the classes that we started. So the class that's going at Widener Memorial School in Philadelphia, the students really, really enjoy it. And some of the other teaching opportunities over the summer, we had a teaching opportunity at Camp Possibility in Indiana. And, you know, just to teach people for the first time who've never had an experience with ballroom dance or thought that they might be able to participate in this art form, to show them how they can do that is really rewarding, because I think it just spreads the message that, you know, you can participate in any art form. You don't need to limit yourself to the assumptions that people make about disability.
So if you could send any message to the community about why the work needs to continue, go forward, what would you say?
I think that everyone should have an opportunity to participate in any activity, art form, anything that you are interested in pursuing, you should have an opportunity to do that. And so I think the key is just to seek out, you know, organizations and people that can facilitate that experience and maybe show you how you can adapt to those activities, as opposed to assuming, well, I can't do it the way everyone else would do it, then I can't do it at all. I think that's the wrong approach. You have to find ways and find organizations like American Danceville, which adapts a popular art form like ballroom dancing to people of all abilities. So just search for the ways to make it happen.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Mm-hmm.
Next up in our show, we'll hear from Cindy Jang, who'll be giving us an update about her research into disabilities and employment. So tell me a little bit about the latest with your research.
Well, I've just been doing more research and looking at how employment opportunities are really difficult for people with disabilities. And as we get into this holiday season, you can really see the struggle for people without a lot of income. I was walking yesterday along downtown Vancouver, and you could see the income disparities and income inequalities, and it's really unfair.
So when it comes to matters like poverty, that can impact a person with a disability's access to medical care or proper nutrition, which can lead to a disability unto itself, not to mention their status in society, because there may be this unspoken prejudice that says, why should we help this person?
Yes. Just this time, it's a very expensive Christmas season, and I was filling a prescription the other day, and each prescription is $11.99 here in Vancouver. And so if somebody has a disability and they have multiple medications to take, that's on top of their prescription payment. There's also the dispensing fee, so that's still hundreds of dollars that are out of their pocket.
So are there any steps you would suggest that we in society can take to eliminate this poverty gap, or the myths and misperceptions about a person with a disability living in these conditions?
Well, having a poverty reduction plan is definitely a first step in looking at how we can address income inequality, and especially for people with disabilities across the country. Just to look at their, not only look at the research, but also implement their research. And we really do need political will if we are able to put forth these policies and these acts.
So what are the next immediate steps in your work?
Right now, I am looking at getting my proposal completed so I can start doing research and so I can start interviewing people with disabilities and people in the workforce to see what's currently happening right now and how people are having discussions on disclosure and stigma in the workforce. One of my first steps is to look at how people are viewing and or quote-unquote seeing disability in the workplace to start addressing the stigma. Currently, there are 1 in 5 Canadians that report having a disability in Canada, as per the newest survey from StatCan. And that's a really big statistic. And so when we're talking about accessibility, really, it's very limited to a certain type of disability. And so I want to start looking at how does society view the rest of disability. So invisible disabilities, like learning disabilities, intellectual disabilities, cognitive disabilities, in addition to the physical disabilities that we currently see.
So do you think the statistic takes into consideration those who might not know they have a disability per se, or those who are afraid to disclose?
It is a self-reported survey. My hope is that people would disclose, but the stigma is so strong. So I think it is still a very underrepresented statistic because people might not know that they have a disability. You're right.
So if you could send any one message to the community about why we need to clear up the stigmas and the myths, what would you say?
I would say that it's that we should clear up the stigma around disability, because this is at least from statistics perspective, it's 20% of our population that can be an amazing opportunity to contribute to the workforce, to society, to the community. And as a country, we really need to look at how we can differently or inclusively incorporate everyone rather than just having a workforce and or a community that is geared towards those who are able-bodied or abled.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay, thank you.
Of course. When it comes to these matters, my friends, for the drug companies, it's one fewer zero on their bottom line. but to a person with a disability who's affected day to day, the right to access is being called into question because they have these lower income situations and have circumstances stacked against them. And honestly, that is a very difficult thing to get out of. That being said, there are individuals and organizations devoted to standing by a person with a disability, and not only helping them get their basic needs met, but helping them to explore their passions. For what is life about if not to follow one's dreams? Whether it be ballroom dancing, or just the dream of having a family and being able to provide for them in a meaningful work situation, what does it all mean if you can't follow what's true to you, what matters most to you? People don't live to work. They work to live, to have those opportunities and those moments that they can enjoy. With the holidays being upon us, the simple fact is, a person with a disability has just as much right to enjoy and to embrace the magic of the season. It's this that always amazes me, that these organizations are able to stand strong, make do with so few resources in many cases. Throughout the year, people take it into their hearts to recognize that these disability groups matter, these lives matter. And so, that is the true gift in disability life, that these agencies exist because we, as a people, have taken it into our hearts to recognize they have value and something to contribute to this world. And that makes all the difference to a person living in a hopeless situation, simply to give them that reminder. Their life matters, their dreams matter, their work matters. Now, for the year ahead, I can't say what successes and what failures we'll have, but we must keep it in our hearts that people with disabilities are part of the equation. In fact, the equation itself is a bigger picture. The question is, how do we include all the world with that sense of equality, that sense of hope, meaningful, purpose-driven existence, to give everyone the chance to explore that which matters to them. You could ask a million different people what matters most to you, and you would invariably get a million different answers. But if you ask the question, does life matter? Do people in this world matter? You would get an overwhelming majority saying yes. No matter what makes us unique, no matter what skills or quote-unquote limitations we have, we all have something to offer. We all have those gifts and those talents. Things that we, as a people, should be allowed to explore. The holidays is a time to come together, to support people, help them be at their best. And people with disabilities are absolutely no exception. So, this holiday, remember, all people are people. It's just a question of what makes them special. Give the gift of hope. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.